Welcome to the Soccer Central Podcast.
It is Thursday. It is the Soccer Central Podcast. I am James Sharman, joined as always on Thursdays by Sportsnet.ca's chief football writer, John Molinaro, ahead of what will be the final weekend in several European leagues, including the English Premier League. We'll get to that a lot in some depth later in today's show, JMO, but I know you're excited to see an Italian hoist the trophy above his head.
Yeah, quite nice.
Yeah.
In fact, Italian winning manager in not only England, but in Germany with Carlo Ancelotti, in Russia, and soon to be in Serie A.
That's right.
And the Champions League.
Hat-trick. Hat-trick of Italian success.
Exactly.
Isn't that wonderful?
That's great.
If you're a football club who needs a gaffer, hire an Italian.
Can't go wrong.
Yep. Unless you're Watford.
Well, that's true.
Walter Mazzarri officially out
right.
as Watford coach. Bit of a nutcase, isn't he?
Yeah, just a bit.
So, yeah, we'll get to that story, as well as the MLS story with the Montreal Impact. We'll talk to CBC's Jessica Rosnack later on about the Impact and what's been a pretty dire campaign so far. But we'll start today talking some Toronto FC with one of our all-time favorites, Laura Army on Twitter. Laura Armstrong. Hello, Laura.
Hi, I didn't know I was one of your all-time favorites.
You are.
I'm going to use that against you in the future.
In fairness, we haven't got many favorites. But you make the list. So listen, I've got to ask you off the top here the biggest pressing question regarding, you know, the team that you follow so closely. JMO's already getting it.
Oh, my God.
How long
can... Why do you bait me by asking me to come on to talk TFC and then... Forcing me to answer questions about Arsenal.
Oh, no, it wasn't Arsenal.
No, that's not where he was going.
No. I'm going to ask you about Kevin Pillar. Can Kevin Pillar maintain these numbers throughout the entire season? Hey, come on, some baseball talk here, Laura. It's your chance.
I have no comment on this situation at the time being.
But you are the Toronto Blue Jays beat reporter for the Toronto Star.
Yeah, I am.
JMO's disgusted, right? I tried for us, okay? I really tried here. Okay, back to TFC then.
Every time. Baseball, every time, JMO.
All right, TFC, they've won 6 straight games. It's a franchise record. It'll be going for 7 on Friday at the Red Bull. Do you notice a different attitude within the team this year? Obviously, they were a very good team last year as well, and even the year before. But do you notice when you're around the team a different swagger?
Yeah, for sure. I always base it on the like sort of glint in Michael Bradley's eye. Like when Michael Bradley has this like gaze that sort of goes from intense to super intense. And it hasn't left super intense as far as I've seen him this year. Like I've only been around the team for 2.5 years now, but he's always been intense, but this year he's extra intense, and it sort of comes down from the top. And even when you've got guys like Drew Moore on the bench and you've got these guys that, you know, maybe you wouldn't expect to have so much swagger, but they do. It's just throughout. Everybody's feeling it. And between Greg Vanney and Michael Bradley and those glints, I think that you've got a team that is still sort of, that December 10th loss is still pretty big in their mind, I would say, even though I don't think that they would.
What have you made of the team's form? I mean, obviously, you know, 6 wins in a row is it's a franchise best, and not too many teams have won 6 in a row in MLS. What do you think? I mean, everyone is talking about the depth, but for you, Laura, is there something else that you kind of attribute this this great form to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what I would say is that they found a way to win when it doesn't look like they're going to. And I think that TFC teams in the past, they wouldn't do that. I mean, you take it back to the Jeffs, you get somebody like Toussaint Ricketts who steps up and scores 2 winners in 2 games. But I would say that, like, you know, there's a grit about this team that I don't think existed before. I don't even think that it existed on the same scale that it exists this year. They do what they got to do to get the result. And I think that's even something that has changed since the beginning of the season when we saw them go through all of those draws. You know, not every game has been pretty. Columbus wasn't pretty, and Minnesota last week certainly wasn't pretty either, but they found a way to pull it off. And I think that just comes down to, I would say that their fitness, I think, is a little bit better this season than it was last season. And I just also think that there's no lapses. There were moments last year where we were seeing TSC sort of shoot themselves in the foot. When there was mistakes, it was sort of coming from the team itself rather than from some heroic effort from the other team. And it's not to say that that's not happening every once in a while this season, but they sort of have managed to mitigate that damage.
It's interesting when you say it hasn't been pretty, and I quite agree. I mean, I look at the game against Columbus and Seattle as prime examples. It makes me wonder, and I'm interested to hear your take as well. I mean, have we seen the best from Toronto? Is there another gear here that they can find and be even better?
Yeah, I think that you saw it in the end of the game against Minnesota, and I know that, you know, that partially comes down to bringing in the likes of Victor Vasquez. But one thing that I don't think that we've seen yet from TFC is I don't think that we've seen their best 11 all together at the same time on a regular basis. So I think that once they're able to do that, I mean, it's going to be difficult now, especially with Nick Haglund out, who I think that you have to consider to be in that 11 it's going to be a while before we see that. But I think that, I think there is another level, and there's some times where you sort of look at them and think they know that and they can push those gears to the point where I think that they'll sort of dominate even more. Like, I think I look back at like the Chicago game, and I sort of think that was the game where I think that they looked the most comfortable. But I don't think that that has been consistent necessarily yet this season. And I think that they can get there pretty easily.
It's a good point. I think if you told most fans preseason that the starting 11 of this team would win six straight games, maybe seven, you'd say, yeah, okay, I can see that. But when you look at the injuries this team's, I wouldn't say struggled with, but has had over the start of this season on a regular basis, and then you say they won six straight games, that to me is almost more impressive at this point. We know the starting 11 is really good, but now we're seeing the team not dependent on Sebastian Giovinco. We're seeing new players who are signed quite unheralded, like, for example, Victor Vasquez, you know, surging to the top of the assists list. The depth of this team, and I know JMO's written about it quite a lot on Sportsnet.ca, but the depth of this team is what you'd expect from a team with a payroll of about $22 million.
Yeah, certainly. And I think that you look at even sort of like players like a Marky Delgado, who came in and sort of pushed the envelope a little bit. And I think what you're seeing is that this is all coming from them being competitive on the training ground. They, you know, they've attributed it in the past to all getting along, which I think makes it easier because you're not necessarily quite probably so frustrated if somebody is on the field ahead of you. But at the same time, I think that they all know when to be competitive and when not to be. And I think that comes from Greg Vanney. I mean, let's be honest, winning's fun. So if it's working for you, you stick with what you're doing.
Talking to Laura Armstrong here of the Toronto Star. Laura, what have you made of the ascent of Raheem Edwards? I mean, I think we got a little peek on this last year when he made those brief Canadian Cup appearances. What has been your sort of impression of, you know, how he's come along in the current MLS season and really made an impression? And do you think there's a way going forward for Vanney to fit both him and Justin Morrow into the starting 11?
Yeah, it's funny because I wrote a story about Raheem before the start of the season, and I spoke to two of his childhood coaches. He basically played between two teams growing up, and they were both very confident that given the opportunity, Raheem would, as long as he had some minutes, he would make his mark. And I think that's what we're seeing. And you know, sometimes that you talk to youth coaches about that and they're just a little bit excitable and you're not sure if that is the case. And then Raheem came and did just that. I think the moment that I really thought this kid has something was when we were in Tampa for the final game of preseason and he muscled David Kalm off the ball. And I think most people would think about him pushing his way like racing down to catch David Kom because he was quite a bit behind him to start the run, when David Kom started the run. And the thing that really stood out for me is that once he caught up with David Kom, who's one of the faster players in this game, he managed to stop and push him off the ball. And Raheem Edwards is not a big guy.
No.
So the fact that he was able to use his body like that was really impressive to me. And I spoke to him afterwards, and I think he almost impressed himself in that moment. I think that he seems to be, and as far as I understand from the coaches that he's worked with, is a very coachable player, and he's very keen to learn. And I think that's what we're seeing, is that he's got the likes of Justin Morrow or Steven Betashore, you know, learning from Michael Bradley and Biz Gild around him, and he's really taking all that in. And when you combine his natural talent, his natural speed, and sort of his vision for the game with what he's learning from these big players around him, he's really growing in a very short period of time. I don't think that means that if he comes head-to-head with Justin Morrow, that he's going to take Justin Morrow's place necessarily. I mean, it's very hard to take the place of, you know, one of the best defenders in the league last year, and he continues to be very versatile. But, I mean, you're looking at a long time with Nick Haglund away, so I think that Greg Vanney is going to have to be a little bit creative if he wants his best 11 players on the field. And I think to do so, he needs to consider playing Morrow at the back more often, because I think that he and Raheem sort of, they're two of Toronto's best players right now, and why would you take one of them off the field?
You mentioned that December 10th loss in the final still hangs over this team. Do you get the impression now, though, that anything short of a championship this year would be deemed a disappointment and a failure?
I think that it's going to be interesting. I think the first step is the supporter shield. I think that we've all sort of forgotten about the supporter shield because they lost the championship last year, but I think that the first step for this team is going to be to win the supporter shield. And then, yeah, I do think so. I mean, I know that we're not allowed to talk about the Blue Jays or whatever, but, you know, we're looking at a team with the Blue Jays where it's kind of like, this is the last people coming into the season. Obviously, everything's sort of gone to hell since then. But people are expecting this team to win a championship, and I think that it's the same thing for Toronto FC. It's, you know, a little bit different in the sense that most of these players probably aren't going anywhere, but you never know. So while you have this crop of stars who seem to get along, who play so well, then yeah, you've got to be going for a championship. And I really don't think that you'd be seeing that glint in the eyes of Michael Bradley or Greg Vanney, as I alluded to earlier, if they weren't planning on going for a championship.
What do you think about the goalkeeping situation, Laura? Clint Irwin obviously started the season as the number one. Alex has kind of taken over since Clint has been off from injury. Now they're back. He's kind of rotated a little bit, but, you know, the impression I get is that Alex is sort of now taken over the number one job. Is that how you see it? Or do you see them kind of rotating them a little bit more before, you know, coming to a decision later in the season?
Yeah, I think that there's still going to be some rotation personally. I think that, you know, where Greg at the beginning of the season, and I think even at the beginning of Clint's injury, was still saying that Clint was the number one, and I am of the opinion that just because a goalkeeper gets injured doesn't mean that he should lose his number one spot. So I think that there was always competition. There was always sort of Bono, when Clint came back, was going to have to work his way and prove that he sort of deserved to be in the squad. And I think that he's done that so far, to the point where instead of Clint being number one, this is now a battle. So I don't know that I would say that I think that it's gone so far that you would say that Bono is the out and out number one, but I would say that it's a step in the right direction in terms of, for Bono, that is, to even be considered sort of on par for Clint. And I think that, why not rotate them? I think that you're going to want to see down the stretch one of these players sort of take control and be the number one goalkeeper. But I think that, you know, you're looking at Canadian championship games, and you're looking at, you know, players going away for a little while. So why not sort of rotate them and see what they can do? And hopefully for the team's sake, that competition is going to make both of them better.
Hey, Laura, are you on Jay's duty right now in Atlanta, or are you back in Toronto?
I am, yeah.
You are, yeah?
I'm in Atlanta. Mm-hmm.
Are you back in time to be watching TFC on Friday on that beat, or are you staying with the Jays on the weekend?
No, I'm staying for the Jays. I'm going to Baltimore on Friday morning.
Do you ever get a day off?
As far as the union believes, yeah.
Oh, I see. This is a case of a young journalist earning her stripes, as they say.
Yeah,
doing every job possible. Laura, thank you so much. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that I like to come and bug you guys at TFC, so I can't give that up.
Right.
And you're great at bugging us.
Yeah, it's nice that you can drop in every once in a while on us.
I think I've been in the press box once this year so far.
Yeah, it's nice when you drop by, too.
Well, I'm usually there,
but
I'm actually enjoying myself. Yeah, listen, would you rather be in the stands drinking beer, or would you rather be in the press box?
You know what? I have season tickets to TFC. I split them. I've had them for a year and a half now or whatever, and I've never sat in my seats in their front row. So this year, my goal is to sit in my seats once.
It's a lot more fun.
I have six or seven games to do it, so...
Yeah, I do the same. I split seasons too, so I've taken full advantage, and I will continue to do so. But hey, listen, if I'm not working the game, which is often the case this year, I'm not going to be stuck beside Molnar in a press box. With respect.
But they have kale salad now.
Do they really? They have kale salad?
Yeah.
I like kale salad.
Yeah, it's got
pomegranate seeds and like apple slices, and it's really good.
But what's that funky dressing that's on it? It's almost kind of, I don't know, I don't like
it. Is it a vinaigrette or a cream
dressing? It's overdressed, I would say.
Yeah, it's kind of like a creamy.
I like the taste of it.
Yeah.
Overdressed kale salad.
It's like a poppy seed vinaigrette.
Yes. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah. I find, though, that with kale salad, it needs to be overdressed because it can be quite dry.
Yeah, it does. Otherwise, it's going to be like too crunchy.
Yeah, exactly.
You still get the crunch.
You're luring me back to the press box now.
I know, right?
That sounds interesting. The food
at the food. You got pulled pork.
That's true. We had pulled pork.
The food is...
You'll have to come when Molinaro cooks for us.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, as much as the team's improved in recent years, the food in the press box has improved dramatically as well from those first few years. Remember the pasta?
I did not.
Oh, that's
they
right.
They had the same... I'm pretty certain that they made this huge vat of pasta in the first year, and they were still serving that same vat of pasta by year four. I'm sure of it.
That's true.
It was really dry.
Oh my God. John, did you eat it?
No, I never did, but I always saw it. I will say this though, year one, there was this like mini refrigerator with Haagen-Dazs ice cream bars. I'd love to know what happened to that. Yeah, I know. It was great.
Whoa.
That's amazing.
It was this
petition to get that back.
It was amazing. It was the special little fridge on the back table that was just specifically for ice cream bars. So it was like,
they were so new to sport, I guess, because, you know, these vultures that are the media, we are just ravenous animals up there. We'll just put anything
if it's free
into our systems. Absolutely. Yeah. Although there's never bloody drinks though. There's never water. It's always gone.
No, there's never water, but they've stopped they've stopped locking the cans.
Oh, have they?
Have they? I haven't noticed.
So yeah, I think so.
Oh, that's a nice step.
That's right a direction. Good step.
Is there still a limit on pizza?
But at least, no, there's a limit on pizza?
There was before. There's a sign there last year saying, I think, two slices maximum.
No, now it says...
Oh, well, I never eat two slices.
Now it says basically just take what you want.
Really?
But it says be courteous to others.
So 11 slices.
Well, if that's your idea of courteous, then sure.
Although with the kale salad, maybe fewer slices. So I'll fill up on the kale.
There you go.
I think it's the only pro sports team in Toronto that you don't... Well, like big four sports team in Toronto that you don't have to pay for the meals though, so we should all just be grateful.
That's really true. Yeah, I know you do the pay.
You got to pay for the Jays.
To pay for it, Jays, Raptors. I've never been to Leafs, but I'm assuming.
How much are you talking?
Like $12, I think.
$12 really? Bucks for a press box meal. That's ludicrous.
Yeah.
No, can you bring a box of sandwiches if you want? Can you bring your own food?
Yeah, you can bring your own food.
Really?
Wow, $12.
Remember last year for the playoffs, MLS playoffs, Yankee Stadium.
Oh, that was glorious.
And they covered it for us. It was it was a highbrow Mandarin is what it was. It was amazing.
Apparently, it's also the best food in MLB.
Is it really, Wow.
Yeah.
I'll give him credit for that.
That was glorious.
Really well done. I'm not going next year, so I'm not going to get to experience it again.
That was a glorious meal.
Yeah, that was a highlight of the playoffs.
That was really good.
That was a highlight of the playoffs for me.
Then we had to sit in those terrible freezing cold press box. Yeah.
That's so true.
I still have my...
Do you still have the blanket or?
From that day. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was...
Neil Davidson got sick of my complaining and bought me a blanket.
I ate so much food that day that I was sweating throughout the game despite the cold temperatures.
Oh my God.
Stuff my face. All right, Laura, thank you so much. We love talking to you, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for doing this, Laura.
That is Laura Armstrong from the Toronto Star. Follow Laura on Twitter at Laura Army for your TFC and Toronto Blue Jays needs.
$12.
That's I can see $5.
Right? Is it like $12? That better come with like alcohol.
It better be served
like
in my seat. That better not be buffet.
That's
crazy. I want waiters. I want wait staff.
That's crazy. And wow.
I wouldn't pay that.
No, neither would I. I'd refuse.
I'll bring a sandwich box. Ham and cheese sandwiches.
Yeah.
All right. So that's your TFC story, people. It's looking pretty good right now. Could be 7 on Friday night.
Red Bull Arena, tough place to play, though. So that's going to be a challenge.
Yep. And you know, Laura mentioned the supporter shield. I'm not sure you want it. In fairness, given the history.
Why? Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know what? I hate the supporter shield in all sports, this regular season nonsense.
Right.
You know, there's one game and there's one trophy that counts.
Yeah, I think it only matters in that it sort of guarantees you, especially in MLS, it guarantees you home field all the way through.
That's fine. But don't give a shield for it or a trophy for it.
Whatever. It's not the worst idea in the world.
No, it's the worst idea in the world.
Okay.
Just so you know.
Fair enough.
You know what the best idea in the world is? And it's just come down today.
The diving thing?
Yep.
Yeah.
The FA have approved, essentially they've taken the MLS's example, I guess, right? Retroactive punishment for diving.
Right.
In games. They call it successful deception.
Right.
So diving, basically. And you can get too much ban for it retroactively going forward.
I believe it only applies, and you correct me if I'm wrong, or maybe you don't even know, but I believe it only applies when you win a penalty. Am I correct?
You know what? Was it?
I thought I saw something like that.
I just saw it now.
I thought it was something to the effect of it only happens if you win in a penalty or maybe two.
Or if you get someone. Or to get an opponent sent off.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Which is good. At the same time, there's a massive gray area in diving and it's going to be very difficult to prove.
Sure it is.
Because often players are trying to avoid contact. They're not diving to win a penalty necessarily, but they're trying to avoid injury.
Right.
It does happen. There's some pretty brutal tackles inside the box. It's tough. There are some which are very obvious.
Right.
I hope they don't go too far with this.
Sure.
But we'll see. It's a good start anyway. A really good start because we need to address this cheating in football. To me, the feigning of injuries is worse than diving. It just does my head in every single game and it honestly ruins my enjoyment. You see it, just players rolling around, trying to get the call, grabbing their faces, their shins, get up. You know, and I know it's a cultural thing and where I grew up, that wasn't accepted, even though it's more and more accepted now, whereas other parts of the world, it's part of the game. I don't care. I think it's awful. Now, you obviously grew up watching the Serie A. It's been commonplace in Serie A from day one.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with this rule.
Why? Oh, the rule. Okay.
Yeah,
what about, though, faking of injuries?
Oh, I think it's deplorable, but, it's always kind of happened. It's good to see that the English FA is taking a step towards stamping it out, so I'm all for it.
I'm not sure, though, they won't be addressing, though, feigning of injuries. They'll be addressing just diving.
Right.
This is, I'm talking about.
But that's a good first step.
When there is, yes, a good step, yes.
That's a good first step.
But just, I don't know how you get around it, the players rolling around and delaying the game.
Right.
To me, it's if the trainer needs to come out onto the field, the player should be taken off the field for X amount of time,
yeah.
Let's say 5 minutes.
Right.
And then you'll see it far less. You know, are you hurt or are you injured?
What I would like, and this is kind of peripherally, I guess, connected to it. What I would like to see is less and less of players kicking the ball out of bounds so a guy can get treatment, because a lot of the times the player doesn't need treatment. If you're on my team and say if James Charman goes down and I want to kick it out, then that's fair enough.
Sure.
I get that. But this sort of, the pressure that the opposing team feels to knock it out, because, the opposing team were always going to be like, hey, kick it out, our guy is down. They're under no obligation to.
Nope.
And if the referee says play on, then you play on. But yet, a lot of time, that team will still kick it out because they don't want to come off looking like jerks.
I know.
So I would like to see that eliminated.
Oh, I agree with you. I saw a few times last weekend, actually, and players, teams continuing to play and the other team getting just furious.
Right.
What are you doing? How can you do that? It's like, the guy's fine.
Right.
Look, he's running around now. And you want to stop my attack? I think I'm with you. It just does my head in.
I've always, and this is a controversial view, I've always said that if you kick it out when the other team is kind of like pressuring you to kick it out, yellow card.
Yeah, sure. Delay of
game.
It's
dissent.
Because
the referee has basically said, The player's not injured. Play on. And you're sort of now taking it in your own hand to officiate the game in a sense. So just play on.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
There you go.
We both like the game being played hard. Simply. Sure. Right? And playing
Absolutely.
Tough. And, you know, we all play sports. And I played sports at a very low level. But I would never, I was always coached, be it through soccer or rugby in particular. You never let the other team think you're hurt.
Right.
Never show that unless you're really hurt. Maybe that's Neanderthal. Maybe that's old fashioned. But that's the way I was brought up. And that's the way I still play. You know, don't let them think you're hurt. Don't give them that edge.
Right.
Oh, I just despise it. Just, you can't trust these idiots. Anyway, we'll see a lot of that this weekend. Some pretty big games. Fewer perhaps than we'd hoped in the final weekend of a variety of teams and seasons across Europe in particular. In the Premier, of course, Chelsea will lift the trophy, as you mentioned earlier. They clinched last week. Lots of question marks regarding this team moving forward. They're going to invest a lot of money, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
They need depth. They need to use like 14 or 15 players on a regular basis this season because they weren't in Europe. And it's going to be a big, big adjustment next season. Lots of speculation around Diego Costa. Once again, will he make the move to China?
Mm-hmm.
Those, they've surfaced. What are your thoughts? Is he back next year at Chelsea?
It's a tough one. I think so. I mean, you know, the lure of the Chinese league, I think, you know, that's certainly a threat that Chelsea has to think about. But, you know, this Chelsea team was, I think, one of the best in the Premier League of the last 10 years, maybe since, you know, Mourinho's first run when they won years back to back. So there's that. And I think also, you know, Champions League is a serious challenge, right? And this is a team that I think is potentially, they need some offseason additions, but I think it's a team that is built for Champions League success. So, you know, the pull of playing in European football's top competition might be enough to keep him. So, you know, I'd like to think he'd stay.
Yeah, I'd like to think he'd stay as well. But I just, the lure of that league and what they're prepared to pay is just, you know, insane.
Mm.
Quadruple wages, which I know we discussed before the show today. You wouldn't necessarily move somewhere for a company.
I would consider it. I wouldn't just say, hey, yeah.
I'd be gone.
Well, as I said, you sell anywhere. Yourself pretty cheaply.
I'll sell out. You want to quadruple my wages? There's not a city in the world I wouldn't go to.
There you go.
Right. I'll be in some war-torn, devastated rubble.
Right. Like Bosnia or something like
sure.
that.
You'd go. Back in the All day, right. Aleppo, four times my wage, I'm there.
Okay. Fair enough.
Maybe not. It'll be interesting, though. Arsenal, of course, are still fine for top four football. 1 point between them and Liverpool. Liverpool are at home to Middlesbrough on Sunday. Arsenal taking on Everton. City is still not safe just yet either. So there is still a lot to fight for Sunday in the Premier League.
City's secured, haven't they?
They can still potentially... Let me check the standings here while I'm here.
I thought they secured...
No, you see, you know what? I read that as well somewhere, and it was actually incorrect.
Oh, okay.
I think mathematically it's unlikely. It's very unlikely.
Right. Okay, that's what I meant. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they've all but a seal.
Yeah, I mean, they're 3 points up on Arsenal right now, and they have a plus +5 goal differential edge.
Okay.
Right? I can't see Arsenal. Well, you never know. Last game of the season, see some odd results. But right. Arsenal destroy Everton 6-0 and right. City lose.
At the end of the day, I don't see Arsenal making up the difference. I don't think they're going to be overcome Liverpool for the final spot.
City at Watford, by the way. So,
there you go.
Yeah, they're not losing that one.
No.
Managerless, essentially, Watford. Is it Arsene Wenger's last game as Arsenal manager?
Could be. I get the sense, though, that he'll be back. Probably they'll sign him for like a 1 year extension and then that'll
do
be
the
it.
Same thing all over again next season.
Yeah, maybe. Who
it's
knows?
Kind of boring, isn't it?
It's kind of like how he does, you know, with those when he did those with certain players when they reached a certain age, when they were like 30, then he would kind of do the yearly renewals.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's what we're going to do. Yeah, maybe that's what we're in for.
Who's paying for these flyover protests? Who's paying for these planes?
I don't know who, but surely they've got better ways to spend
You'd
their
think
money.
So, right?
Like, what's Jesus, the point of that?
I just don't get it. You think you're going to sway ownership by that?
Like, you're donate not. It to charity. Like, I'd rather you know, help yeah. someone out than spend it on that foolishness.
And I mean, clearly you are an Arsenal fan, right? And you have to acknowledge that this guy has redefined your club and done a lot of very good things. How insulting. You may want him out, but that kind of protest is making him look bad, embarrassing him, the man that rebuilt your club into a championship caliber team.
Yeah, I just think it's lame. It's
disgusting.
A pretty pathetic way to...
I think Wenger should leave, but I think that kind of protest is just disgusting.
Right.
Very short memories, these people. I think, again, like you said, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he re-signs a year or two, but I just have a suspicion that, you know, back in March he said he was going to leave, Well, he said we'd know very soon.
He said we know very soon. Yeah.
And here we are now, end of the season. We still don't know. What is the delay? If you're going to stay, why not announce it and just end all this? Mm. So I have a bit of a suspicion he could be leaving.
Could be. We'll see.
And then we'll see. It'd be interesting. What else has happened this weekend? I mentioned Liverpool against Borough. You know, these transfer plans for all these teams, be it Arsenal, be it Liverpool, be it City, are so contingent on what happens on Sunday, aren't they?
Yeah.
You've got plan A, your A-list of teams, of signings you want to sign, and your B-list, and they're very different.
Sure.
I saw a rumor just came down now. Again, it's a rumor. Who knows where this kid's going, but Mbappe at Monaco.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Liverpool and Arsenal battling out for him. Also, Lacazette, the two teams battling out for him. Now, I don't think either of those players are going to either team, but the fact is that they're both those teams are battling for the same kind of players, makes this weekend even more important.
Sure it does, yeah, absolutely.
Champions League means so much. So yeah, that's the Premier League season. All pretty much in a nutshell. Sunderland down, Middlesbrough down, Hull down, Swansea just survive. It's been an okay season. Hasn't been a classic season by any stretch, I don't think. It's fair to say.
Yeah, for entertainment-wise, I've kind of found intrigue in the Tottenham-Chelsea thing.
Oh, intriguing. Hasn't been a bad season, but yeah. I think we're still in the shadow of what happened last year. We're still in kind of
disbelief
of what happened.
Absolutely, yeah, no doubt.
But, it's certainly rushed through. In Italy, as you mentioned, it's Juve, a draw away from clinching on their penultimate weekend of their season.
Yes, at home to Crotone, who is in the relegation zone, and Juventus haven't lost at home in I don't know how many games. I've lost track now, so you tend to think that that's going to wrap up the Scudetto.
I would say so. So they will be clinching the double, having won in the cup this past week.
One more to go.
Does the double mean a lot in Italy?
Not as much as I would say it does in Spain or in England. No, not particularly.
Coppa Italia is kind of
It's the domestic.
Upon.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say frowned upon, but it's not really valued as it is in as domestic cup competitions are in other competitions. The only real significance it has now is, you know, in terms of treble implications. You know, right. So if Juventus goes on to win the Champions League next month, then that'll be massive.
Looking at the table in the Serie A, the one team that jumps out, Atalanta back in the top five.
I guess for them.
But Inter Milan down at eighth place. What has happened at Inter Milan?
Well, they're just a mess. And there's all this talk now that they're being linked with Diego Simeone, which would be, a big, massive move
obviously
by them.
There.
Yeah, played there. Big icon there.
But it's so instability there. And I know they've got the new ownership there, but I mean, it's been a disaster since it took over.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's just that sort of, as you said, that instability has really kind of has hurt them the last few seasons. And they're just, they're a mess right now.
Very quietly, Francesco Totti goes into the sunset from Roma, it seems. And a little bit controversial the way he's gone out this season, isn't it?
Yeah, because it seemed like, the club announced his retirement without consulting him because he has kind of hinted that it might not be his last game. Now he could go on to play somewhere else.
But let's hope he doesn't.
He's
a Romanista. He's 40.
Yeah.
But every minute of his career.
Since he was a teenager, essentially 16 or 15, whatever it was. So, it'd be like, Francesco Totti is Roma and he is the city too. I mean, I've been to Rome, have family there and visited the city. And, he's one of those iconic players that you naturally associate with a player, and there's very few players, in any sport around the world, but he's definitely one of them. So it'd be very, very weird to see him suiting up for another team.
Yep, sad. 40 years of age and to go out that way. I mean, it'd be nice to him to go out on his terms, but he's barely played this year.
Yeah.
And at 40, he has to also realize, the team finished second in the league. It's
right.
A pretty good team.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's time to move on.
Sure.
If he went to MLS for a year or China, somewhere outside of Europe, would you still consider him a one team player?
Well, technically, no.
But would you consider him one club?
But I would say, technically, no. But I still would, I guess, in a sense, sure.
I mean, Xavi went to the Emirates, right?
Yes.
Does anyone know how he did there? Is he still playing there?
No, I don't think. That's the thing. Point is, too, is that people still just naturally think of him as a Barcelona,
as a
one
club
guy.
Right?
So
because of that,
I don't think if Totti were to do that for a season, I don't think it would damage that any.
Tarnish his image.
No,
in Rome.
I don't think so.
In Spain, Real Madrid are very close to their first league win in 5 years.
Just need a draw.
Yeah. It's been an intriguing campaign there, actually, as intriguing as Spain can be, given the usual suspects, of course.
Yes.
But yeah, they are currently, is it 1 point up on,
three points.
There we go. 3 points. They won midweek.
Right.
3 points up on Barcelona. One game remaining. Real beat Celta Vigo 4-1. this past weekend. This weekend, Barca up against Eibar.
I think.
And Real is up against
Malaga, I want to say.
Malaga, yeah. Right. At Malaga. So that's Spain sorted out. Atletico will end up finishing in third place. They stumbled there for a bit this season.
They did.
They found themselves. Sevilla, Forso. Same old story, really, in Spain. In Germany, though, it's been maybe the most intriguing of all the top leagues.
Yeah.
In Europe. Bayern Munich champions, no surprise there, of course, but man, they were pushed to the brink.
They were.
Against Leipzig, the most hated team in Germany.
Yeah, and we've got and on sportsnet.ca, we've got like a 3,000-word story on that story, just talking about their ascent from the lower leagues to the buyout by Red Bull to becoming exactly that, Germany's most hated team. So it's a fascinating story, so I highly recommend you check it out. But yeah, they no doubt they pushed Bayern to the limit.
Rosen, Bullsport, Leipzig. I mean, they still finished 13 points back at Bayern Munich, but, you know, it was a conversation there for a while.
It was.
They were in first place.
They were in first for a while. Yeah,
they were. Amazing game last weekend, too. They're up 3-2 on Bayern with, what, 5 minutes left?
I think it was 4-2.
Was it 4-2?
Yeah.
It was 4-2.
And it ended up 5-4, I want to say.
Yeah. That's German football for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Dortmund finishing in third place as it stands right now, but they're tied with Hoffenheim, but they have a +4 superior goal differential edge. So, there's your top four Champions League teams, though, regardless, in Germany, Bayern, Leipzig, Borussia Dortmund, Hoffenheim. So that race, I mean, third qualifies you automatically for the Champions League, as it does in England. So fourth place will be a qualifying round for these teams. So Dortmund, potentially, if they blow it this weekend, and Liverpool end up finishing fourth, could potentially meet in a playoff for the Champions League this summer. That'll make, finally, a playoff game interesting. Generally, there's like
been some
big clubs against crap clubs.
Yeah, yeah. That'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, it is. All right, should we switch back to MLS now?
Yeah, let's
do it. Earlier, we heard from Laura Armstrong about Toronto FC. Let's switch now a little bit further east here to Montreal, and CBC's Jessica Rusnak joins us. Jessica, welcome to the podcast here. It's been a trying season so far for the Impact. Dead last right now in the East, and it's been a familiar pattern, it seems. Really bad starts to games, then they find their form when it's too late. I'm sure it's been acknowledged by the club. Is there an easy explanation why this has been the case?
I don't know, and that's been something I've been trying to figure out all season from the players, and I don't think that they even really know what's going on with them. I would have to say it's a lack of confidence right now that, you know, they fall behind early in the game and then they're able to claw their way back in, but it just kind of seems it's either too late or they have one little mental mistake and that ends up costing them the game. That's what we saw against the Columbus Crew last game. And I think that's just a pattern that they're in, and they just need to break it. Now, going into the game against Columbus, was playing their third game in 8 days, and the Impact had a really big victory over DC the game before. So I was thinking that they'd be able to build off that game and maybe come in with a little bit more confidence, but that was not the case with them. What I think it may come down to is maybe a miscommunication between the players, that a lot of times when, you know, you try and figure out what's going on, one player says one thing and the other player contradicts it. Dominic Oduro has pointed out quite a bit that they've played a lot of games on the road and no other MLS team has had that. But, you know, in reality is, it's cold right now. You can't be playing at Saputo Stadium. You know, the Big O is not really an option for them at the moment either. But, and then you talk to another player and they said, well, it doesn't really matter because at the end of the season, we get tons of home games then, and that's when it really matters. So right now, I think that the Montreal Impact just aren't on the same page.
Yeah, you mentioned the Columbus game there a few minutes ago. Interested to hear your take on Blerim Zamali's debut, what you thought of him and how you see him fitting into the squad going forward.
You know what? I thought he had a pretty good debut. He played the full 90 minutes. He did come over from Bologna, Italy, earlier that week. So he got pretty adjusted with his new club, with the new time difference, you know, the new culture of the city and everything. So I was pretty impressed with him for the first start. And I think he's a guy that they want to rely on to bring some, you know, veteran leadership on the field and maybe just a different, you know, headspace, that he hasn't been around this negativity or, you know, this losing streak that the Montreal Impact have been on so far since the season began. I'm expecting some big things from him. He's a player that, you know, Joey Saputo, he also owns part of Bologna on top of owning the Montreal Impact, that he got him to come over earlier than expected. Originally, he was supposed to come in about June time, but he came over in May. He said it was not because of, that was not a panic move because of the way they started the season. However, I do believe that had something to do with it, that Bologna allowed him to leave with the season still going on over there. But it'll be interesting to see how his play develops with the North American style once he gets a few more games under his belt.
You mentioned leadership there, and that's an interesting point, because when I look at this Montreal team, you know, I don't know who the leaders are on this team. I mean, certainly Patrice Bernier, but he's not sort of playing every day. Is that an issue? I mean, do I have it wrong? Do the Impact lack leadership?
It could be. You know, Evan Bush, their goalkeeper, is definitely a huge voice in that locker room and a guy that a lot of people look up to. But I think there is sort of this lack of leadership right at the moment that they keep saying, you know, everyone needs to step up their game. You shouldn't be looking to the guy next to you to do something. You should go out and take initiative yourself. But you know, it seems like a lost team at the moment. And Mauro Biello, the coach of the Montreal Impact, said after last game against Columbus when they lost that it was a story of two different teams. And I think that just kind of shows that miscommunication that I've been talking about, that you don't have a group of leaders to say, you know, come on, guys, let's all play on the same way. Let's all be on the same page and really have them rally together. That I think it's a bunch of people who are right now playing individually rather than as a team.
I wonder, though, is it a good excuse that Mancoso's out? He's been out for a while. I think they're saying overall it could be as long as 8 weeks, that thigh injury. Obviously, he's so effective in the attacking half of the field. Is it easy to lean on that injury and say, well, that's kind of part of the reason when everyone's healthy again, we'll refind our form?
Well, I think right now the Impact are constantly making excuses for the reason why they haven't been playing well. So I wouldn't be surprised if they use that, but I don't necessarily think it's a justified excuse that, you know, that's part of sports, that you do lose key players for a long period of time. And now you just have to find other players who can step up their game and, you know, fill that void that's there. So for the Impact, I wouldn't necessarily use that as a big reason as to what's been going on with them. It's just been since the start of the season, that I don't know if they came in feeling a little bit too good about themselves from what they were able to accomplish last season going to the Eastern Conference Final. Then no one really expected them to get there. So maybe they were sort of having that same vibe that they can just repeat what they did the year before, but I think it was because they surprised people. They didn't have the pressure that they now have coming into this year.
Where does Mauro Biello fit into all this in terms of their shortcomings on the field? Do you get the sense that he's under any kind of pressure from the fans or ownership to start producing results?
Well, what's tough with Mauro Biello, because he's been part of the Montreal Impact since day one. I remember as a kid going to the Bell Center, which was known as the Molson Center at the time, when they played in an indoor soccer league. And that's how far back he was part of the Impact organization. But the Impact have had this revolving door of coaches since joining the MLS. That I think that because Joey Saputo and the rest of the management staff have a very good relationship with Mauro Biello, he's actually Nick DeSantis' brother-in-law as well, that he probably has a little bit of a longer leash than some other coaches in the past. But I think they also need to find this consistency, that they just can't, again, fire a coach, because that's been the story and that really hasn't been the answer. That I don't think Mauro Biello's job is in jeopardy, but I definitely do think there's more and more pressure getting built up on him.
Jessica, it was interesting earlier this week that MLS Commissioner Don Garber was in Montreal, and you know, among the other things he talked about was you know, why Montreal isn't getting the MLS All-Star Game, and he kind of you know, not so subtly, took some digs at the city, talking about, you know, they need to sell out Stade Saputo more. And I think the one quote that really hit me home the hardest for me, when he said, his quotes were, you know, we need more relevance for this team. You know, you're there, you're obviously on the ground in Montreal. What's your take on this? Where do the Impact fit in the sort of sporting landscape? And does he have a point?
Well, they definitely leapfrogged over the Montreal Alouettes, I would say that for sure. But, you know, they can't compare to the Impact that the Montreal Canadiens have here. So that I found was a little bit weird that he said their relevance, because the Impact do have a pretty good following here in Montreal. If you look at the three major sports, they're now second out of the three. What I do say about the Montreal Impact is that their marketing kind of lacks individual players, that they advertise the team rather than maybe single out a few players. Now, if you look back to the Montreal Alouettes, Anthony Calvillo was a longtime face of that franchise, and he's part of their coaching staff now, and he still is. So the Alouettes did a really good job of sort of pushing those players onto the community. But as of right now, with the Impact, they're not really doing that. That I think if you ask some people who are non-soccer fans, they probably can't name a single player on the Montreal Impact. So, you know, on their billboards and different promotions that they have to advertise their games, rather than just say, you know, come out and see the Impact, you know, like really push some of these players, like push Patrice Bernier. He's a local guy. He grew up in Brossard on the South Shore, like really make him the face of this team. And they haven't really been doing that. So I think if they sort of had more of a connection that you can make to certain players, it would help draw a crowd. But that being said, I think, you know, him saying that they can't get an All-Star game because of the lack of attendance or the inconsistency in the attendance is not really true. You know, Chicago is hosting the MLS All-Star game this year, and I believe they're, you know, second last when it comes to attendance. So, you know, his message was a little bit poorly received here in Montreal.
No, and that's a fair point. I do wonder, though, it just always boggles my mind, because I've been to Stade Saputo several times, and I think it's a great night out. And I mean, it's very convenient, too. It's, you know, close to two metro lines. So, and yet often it's not, you know, the crowd is just, you know, somewhat disappointing. And you sort of balance that versus last year when, you know, you had over 61,000 in the Big O for the game against Toronto. So, you know, when it's a big occasion, fans will come out. I think it would just, watching it from afar, I'm just a little, I don't know what, I can't make out why they can't sort of, you know, draw more consistently and have more of an imprint within the city. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, it's, you know, Montreal has always been known as more of an event city. And,
right.
You know, as the season went on, the Impact kept going further and further. More people started, jumped on that bandwagon and wanted to go support them. I think, you know, that they just have to sort of maybe do a little bit of a better job, even talking about how to get to Stade Saputo, because it's a little bit east from downtown, like the core of downtown Montreal, that if they talked a little bit more about, you know, what bus systems you could use, or, you know, the metro system, and just sort of maybe kept reminding people just how accessible it is through public transportation, would just make it a little bit more easier.
Right. Well, get your act together down there, Montreal.
Well, on that note, I mean, is it a football city? Obviously, the World Cup looks like it could be coming to North America in 2026. There's a very good chance, in fact, including 10 games in Canada. Has there been much talk about whether Montreal would be interested or would be able to host some games?
I think that they could. There definitely is an interest. You know, when the Women's World Cup was in Canada a few years ago, Montreal hosted you know, a few games here. And there was a draw that, you know, people come out, they like to see that. And as I mentioned, you know, them being an event city, that they'll come out and say, you know, this is maybe once in a lifetime when I can go out and see this type of soccer, and they'd be interested in going to it. You know, Montreal is really a diverse community, like as many other places in Montreal, so that you do attract a bunch of different people that wouldn't necessarily go to a hockey game would be more interested to go to see this kind of soccer. But what is interesting too is just the mayor of Montreal as well. His nickname is Kodak Coderre, because his last name is Coderre, and he likes to be anywhere he can take lots of pictures or, you know, be on the front page of anything. If he was seen at the Impact games ringing the goal bell. And that's something he would be interested in. I know some people were saying that maybe one of the reasons why the MLS game didn't, All-Star game couldn't come to Montreal is because the commissioner, Don Garber, mentioned that he had yet to meet the mayor of Montreal. And some people said, you know, he's more interested in bringing a baseball team back to Montreal. But that's not necessarily true. He can do something to make, you know, more people come to the city, get his face out there. I think that's something he would really support.
And maybe World Cup games might expedite a new stadium or a rebuilt Big O as well. You know, there's so many factors there.
Yes, and that Big O is just, you know, if there's more than 10 centimeters of snow, you can't play in there because the roof might collapse.
Yeah, so, we know. Yeah, during the playoffs last year, there was some concern that might happen, actually.
Yeah,
the only indoor stadium that you have to worry about the weather for.
Yeah,
precisely. Exactly.
But personally speaking, I mean, how great would it be to get some France games, for example, in Montreal in 2026?
Massive.
It'd be a perfect fit if the stadium issues resolved by then. But lots to talk about. I think it could be a great, great soccer city, Montreal, if not already.
And especially too, where Saputo Stadium is located and the Big O, it's very much the area that's close to where a lot of Italians live as well. So if
right,
you
sure.
have, you know, Italy there, you know, there's a lot of people that I think would come out that wouldn't normally go see a soccer game, and then they might be interested in going to check out an Impact game after that.
What is the capacity for Saputo?
Saputo, it's just over 20,000.
Right. Yeah. So FIFA is 40, right?
Yeah.
I believe.
And it's pretty convenient because, like, as I said, whenever I go to Montreal, I stay downtown, and it's serviced really by two metro stations.
It's easy, yeah.
Yeah, so it's pretty easy, I find anyway, pretty easy to get to. I'm amazed that, you know, they don't, the Impact Club, they don't sort of like tell people that or sort of get that message across that, yeah, take public transportation because it is fairly easy.
Yeah. It is, but with them, you know, it's more people that are coming from the surrounding suburbs that
run into
more traffic trouble.
Gotcha.
Then that's why I mean that, you know, if you live in the suburbs, you're not usually taking public transportation, you're taking your car. So maybe kind of remind those people you can, you know, park your car at a metro stop and then hop on the metro, and then that saves you being traffic for an hour. So that's a marketing side of the Impact that I think they need to improve on.
Gotcha. Interesting.
Well, Jessica, thank you so much. I really enjoyed this. Let's chat to you again later in the season.
And hopefully they can turn something around and, you know, then get more butts in the seats for the Impact game.
Let's hope so. Yeah, absolutely. That is Jessica Rusnak. You can follow her on Twitter at Jess Rusnak. You know, I always find it funny how you find a way to justify some stories from Montreal every year. You know, you find a way to get
there for a couple
of trips, you know. I'm not questioning your journalistic integrity here, but you do like Montreal.
I like the city of Montreal very much. Very much.
Is that your favorite city to travel to?
In Canada?
Yeah.
I'd say so, yeah. I like Vancouver, too. I like Vancouver a great deal, but it's such a kind of a pain to get there because it's like a five-hour flight, whereas Montreal, it's so close. It's like a 45-minute sort of plane ride or, you know, a four-hour train ride, but I love Montreal. I love the whole vibe and just their attitude, and they're very laid back, which is what I like. It's stark contrast to Toronto.
Yeah, not that we're dismissing Toronto. I love Toronto as well.
No, absolutely not. It's just different.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, that was that. That was the podcast for today. It's going to be a big weekend on the network, of course, as the Premier League wraps up. We have at 9:30 Eastern all these games for you. Arsenal against Everton on Sportsnet. Must win time, essentially, for the Gunners if they have any hopes of finishing in the top four.
It's over.
We're showing the game.
Oh, sorry.
Draw the audience.
Tune in and watch.
It's not
in record numbers.
It's not over because Liverpool at home against Middlesbrough, which on paper should be an easy win, but we know that is just the kind of team that the Reds hate playing. Yeah. They're going to sit back, put 10 men behind the ball. As a Liverpool fan, I will be extremely nervous for those 90 minutes. I can see this going wrong.
Okay.
Just saying.
Fair enough.
Just saying. And how amazing would it be, though, for Arsenal to find a way into the top four
after all
that's happened the last few weeks and months?
Oh, my God.
It'd be unbelievable.
I don't want to say, because it wouldn't be like 1989, but...
No, but it'd be dancing in the streets.
Yeah, oh,
North
definitely.
London.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. We have in Sportsnet World, Manchester United against Crystal Palace. United, of course, eyeing that little game in...
Stockholm.
Was it Wednesday or Thursday?
Is it next week?
When is it?
No, it's not until... I think it's the following
week. It's for the Champions League. So yes. I'm getting FA Cup before then.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's right. It's a week ahead. We have Hull against Spurs and Sportsnet 1. It's going to be a great, great weekend. Now, Chelsea
will be...
We're going to be showing the trophy race post-match on Sportsnet, and I imagine also on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet 1 online. Do we know?
Sportsnet Now, yeah.
On Now, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, log on. Tune in. It's going to be a good weekend. Our thanks to Jessica Rusnak of the CBC and Laura Armstrong of the Toronto Star. JMO, thank you.
Thank you.
As always, and thank you to Eric Prime behind the glass. And thank you, everyone, for those of you that were listening. I'm James Sharman. Cheers for listening.